Take off the stream at the bottom.
No banner. Yep.
I'll get it. That it's so cool. All right, well, Kufar Akbar, everybody, welcome to the show. Welcome to Cross the Crest. Got the cross of a fence here. All right, where did he go?
Woohoo!
Oh, that's you, Connie. Okay. I was like, wow, who is this? This is Omar.
Yay.
Hello, Omar. How are you?
Salam alaikum.
Can't hear him. He's having audio issues. Okay, so tonight we were going to be talking about slavery, the difference between slavery according to the Bible, according to Christianity, and slavery according to Islam. But on Sunday, we did a show on... Well, actually, we covered two things. The first thing that we covered was the authenticity of the Gospels, how we know that the Gospel message is true, how we know the Gospels are authentic, and what evidence that we have for them. And we also wanted to jump into what evidence is there for this Injil, the Injil that we find mentioned in the Quran. And, you know, where is this Injil? If it was supposed to be a book that was given to Muhammad, or not Muhammad, sorry, given to Jesus. So we invited Omar on at that time, and Omar said that he would come. And I don't know, people have things come up, and I get it. So we just charged on with the show, but he is here tonight. But
Eric,
I don't know if he can.
Yeah, yes. Eric, he's asking in the back channel there in our chat if we can hear him.
We cannot hear him. I cannot hear a word he's saying.
Can you unmute yourself, Omar?
Okay, I can unmute his mic, but he has to have the... I can mute him, but I...
I asked him that. I told him to leave and come back and test his mic before he enters.
Okay. I'm sure we'll get to it. Boy, we got all kinds of... people in the chat already. Look at that. I like that. I appreciate you guys coming to the show. Okay, so since he's here, now he's not.
No, he's just gonna try to re-enter so he can see if he can test his mic before he gets in.
Okay. All right, super.
He may have to do a restart on his phone, but yeah, we'll go to that point. It happens.
Okay, what's well, up, you Kaffirs?
Yo, Dr. Kufanphobia.
Hey, is this the John? Omar that threatened to decapitate me?
Yeah, that was my question. If he is, we can't do this, Eric. Omar, can you speak? Can you unmute yourself, Omar?
Hey, okay, Dr. Kufarphobia, your background there. That's what are these
do
guys
do? You want him to change it? Just tell them.
Sufis, man. That's my brother Sufis dancing.
They're what now?
That's the Sufi dance. They're getting down to John Travolta.
What do you mean a Sufi dance? I don't understand. That's I know what a Sufi is.
They dance.
The Sufis dance.
Really?
Yes.
It's disco night at the mosque.
It's all over the internet.
Do they dance to music?
Yeah.
Okay, now hold on a second.
Yes.
I thought music was haram.
Oh, not for Sufis.
Not for them.
They're some of the best dancers in the world.
They probably got some strong leg muscles now by that.
I know.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Dancing to the 90s or 80s, whatever that thing was. Okay, Umar, we still cannot hear you, sir. You can unmute yourself. If you can try to unmute yourself. I'm not sure how if you're okay. If you are in the audience, I can't remember how this goes.
So I've asked him to when I asked him before is you might have to, and it, Omar, or if you're listening, you might have to restart your phone, and then come back again. That's another possibility. I've had difficulties, but I don't usually use a phone.
Only take like 2 minutes or more. If you can hear us, just do a restart on your phone and then come back in.
Well, okay. Here's what happens when I click on his mic. It says, can't unmute your guests because they chose to mute themselves.
So that's quite a statement. So you just don't want to talk is what it is?
Sometimes it's not like that. So
All right. So go ahead and restart. Jump right back in. We'll wait for you. We won't talk about you behind your back. We won't, I promise. We'll wait for you to come back in. Because there's all kinds of other things that we can be discussing on the show before. Okay, so hopefully he'll come back. All right, so what we will discuss is the evidences for what we'll do is I'll kind of set up this up. Oh, keep in mind, I have to be out of here. Absolutely, positively have to be out of here no later than 6:30. As a matter of fact, I have to be at my church at 6:30. So if I even get out of here earlier, that will be great.
I'll hit you over the head when
that's
it comes
7:30 Eastern time.
7:30 Eastern time. Yes. And we have a meeting. And I tell you what, we had a meeting, or this past weekend. Well, I'm not going to talk about it because anytime that you have tension in the church, it doesn't just, you know, hurt the way you, you know, when, if you have, you know, like a confrontation with somebody at work, or you have a problem with somebody that, you know, this is different when, because I've never really had a problem with anybody at church before, but this past weekend, it just hurts my soul. It really does. And because, you know, I love these people as brothers and sisters in Christ and I do anything for them. And this past weekend, they got snotty with me after I went, not supposed to know, left hand's not supposed to know what the right hand's doing. Okay. I'm just going to say that I went out of my way to take care of something for the church. And then they just threw it back in my face. I was just like, dude, are you serious? But
are these the same guys that you've known over 10 years? Let me ask you.
Oh, yeah. I've known these guys for 20 years, all of them.
For 20 years.
20 years, okay. 20 plus years. I've been going to the church over 20 years.
Yeah. Start testing the spirits because a lot of this, what's his name? His doctrine is not starting to, but has been in the church for about 15 years. Oh, what's his name? He's a heavy set guy. Rick Warren. So test that spirit. Yes. Yeah. Because what it's trying to do is separate. They're the sheep. And if you don't agree with them, Eric, they think you're a goat, and then they'll
they don't like Rick Warren, the purpose-driven life. They know but I understand what you're saying, though. It's just been 20 years. It's been 15 years is how long it's been, come think about it. But, I mean, still.
Yeah, you know, test the spirits then. Just start testing the spirits, okay? That's all I'm asking you.
And I was actually, the thing is that I'm a deacon in the church. I'm the Sunday school superintendent. I teach a Sunday school class. I handle all the children's service stuff. My wife is actually the bookkeeper for the church. So we you know, if we would leave the church, it would. I don't want to say, well, if I left the church, this would really hurt. It actually would, because they would be hard pressed to find somebody to do their books, because my wife is really good with that kind of stuff. She really is. And so that it would be hard for that. And I'm not thinking about leaving. I did consider it, because I'm thinking, look, I don't need to take this from you guys if you're going to treat me like this. But anyway, we're going to have
a question. May I ask a question?
Is it personal?
No.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Of course not. No. You know, I don't do that. I don't even do that back channel with you. Okay. Have you personally sat down and talked with them and had a personal talk with them?
Oh, that's what tonight's about.
That's what tonight's about? Yeah. Like after you do this? Oh, okay. So that's why you're only here for an hour and a half today.
Right.
Good. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, sir.
So I covet your prayers.
Praying already, yes, sir.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to deal with, but you know, it'll be okay. All right, so let's talk a little bit about what we're going to be discussing. I don't want to sit here and leave everybody hanging. We're going to be talking about the Injil according to the Quran. Now, the Quran speaks of the Injil. Let me see here. It references in Quran 5:14, and then it says, with those who say we are Christians, we made a covenant, but they neglect a portion of what they reminded of. Therefore, we excited them among them enmity and hatred to the day of resurrection, and Allah will inform what they did. Does that make sense? That doesn't make sense. Okay, this is condemning the Christians for not maintaining their gospels. Okay, so this one, this is 5:15.
Accusations without proof.
Yeah, okay. O followers of the book, indeed our messenger has come to you, making clear to you much of what you concealed of the book and passing over much. Indeed, there has come to you light and a clear book from Allah. But where is it saying? I just pulled this up. This was, I guess I should have just pulled up the other one. Doggone it. I'm sorry. Let me just pull this other one up, because this other article that I had up about this, really, this is actually from Answering Islam. This is Sam Shimon's site. Okay, this is 57. Let's see, 57. Is this 57? Oh, 546. In their footsteps, we sent Isa, okay, son of Maryam, confirming the Torah that had come before him, and we gave him the, okay, let me put this up on the screen. We gave him the Injil. Let me put this up here so we can see where we go. Bada bing, bada boom, there we go. We gave him the Injil. This is where it says that, which is the gospel, and which was guidance and light.
Can you grow bigger. That? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to make it bigger. There we go. Put it full screen. There it is. Okay. Jesus has given me the book. Lo, I'm God's servant. God has given me the book. And this is in chapter 19, verse 30. And it is he who has sent down the book to you, Muhammad, with truth, confirming what has come before it. And he sent down the Torah and the Injil. So here you have clear passages stating that Jesus was given a book. Well, which book is that? Well, they call it the Injil. So if Jesus was given a book and it is the Injil, then what is the gospel message according to this Injil? That's what I'm going to ask. I want to ask Umar tonight is where is this book? Because we can go through a whole laundry list of what the Gospels are according to church history. And I just wish he would get here so we wouldn't have to. Who is that? Show that, Paul, since we're just sitting around.
Okay.
Show that one meme that you had about.
I already closed it. Let me see if I can pull it back. All right.
Can I send you a meme too?
That's funny. What's your main topic?
Yes, sir. It's on. It's in your Facebook Messenger. I just sent it. It's on Sahih Muslim 27A, where the Muslim scholars, it writes that Allah revealed the Torah and the Gospel, and then in parentheses, they write Bible. That is a very, very key high Sahih. Woohoo! That's it.
Is that it right there?
Read it for us.
Okay, this is Hadith. Okay, whenever you intends to go to sleep, he should lie on the bed on his right side and then say, "O Allah, the Lord of the heavens, and the Lord of the earth, and the Lord of the magnificent throne, our Lord, and the Lord of everything." What is that? Everything? What is that word?
It's everything.
Everything.
Everything. Everything.
The splitter of the grain of corn. My microwave does that. And the date stone or fruit kernel, the revealer of Torah and Injil, which is translated
Bible.
Woohoo!
This is the Muslim scholars editing that and putting in parentheses Bible. You know, they don't want to see it, they don't want to hear it, they don't want to know it. But it's there, right in their Sahih, Muslim Sahih, Sahih Hadith, Sahih Muslim 27A.
Okay, I got to sneeze. Tired of this.
I have one more slightly different one, and I guess we can go right into the, he's not showing up. I don't know that he, I don't know what his actual purpose is. If his mic isn't working and he's playing this game, I don't know. All right. Just. How do you like that one? And Tom. Oh, can't remember his last. Yeah. You know, I like that one.
and you know, when you go to sunnah.com, I'm sorry, I'm talking a lot, but I just got a gift of gab right now. But if you go to the sunnah.com and you put the word Bible to search, oh, it'll show the word Testament. It'll show the word Bible. It'll highlight Torah. And mostly it highlights the word Injil and Gospel.
Interesting.
Oh, very interesting.
Yet they claim that it's not accurate or something. They come up with something to say it's not the real deal. It's telling one story, talking out of two sides of your mouth is what it really is.
Yeah, if it's not the real deal, see, the proof of burden is on them. So it's like, okay, we'll prove it. Where is it at? Where's this NGO? Where's the other Torah that's not like our Bible? See? So they can't be speaking. And there's a verse that it says to the Christians and Jews that if you're telling the truth, to prove it by your holy writ. By your holy writ, your holy scriptures.
Okay, how long does it take to restart a phone?
No,
two minutes.
Two minutes.
I think the Facebook was... I'm sorry, StreamYard was telling you the truth that he purposely muted himself. Doesn't say much for the person, unfortunately.
Okay, well.
Omar, Eric, if it's that same Omar that wrote in the back channel in Clubhouse to John here that you need to be decapitated, all of us in Clubhouse are aware now, and we remove him from the room every time we see him. So we have basically boycotted him in Clubhouse.
When did this happen?
John knows this. John could speak of it. John?
Yeah. last time was the weekend. I think Saturday or Sunday. I don't remember exactly, but it was a long speech, and he was lying so much. And even he bring a link. I insisted that he read the link. And he lied over the link, and he too much. I wish him be with us to see how he understands Islam, because he doesn't understand Islam really.
Wow. And yeah, this was Dr. Kufar Phobia that he wrote that. Dr. Kufar Phobia, he wrote in the back channel. John, are you here? Yeah, there you are.
I'm here, yeah. Now, I think I had challenged him for a debate, and we were going back and forth, and I guess he didn't like something I said about Muhammad. So he said, oh, you should be decapitated. I'm like, okay.
Hey, send me that picture again, because I lost it on my phone. John, Dr. Kufar, if you can send that to me again.
The one of him?
Yes, of him doing that in the back channel. Yeah, I lost it.
Yeah, I think I posted it on Skype. I'll have to go look for it.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Yeah, because I'll put it up on the screen if you guys get it to me.
Excellent.
Let me see if I can find it.
Just message it to me, because I didn't know this had happened. I mean, that's really unhinged behavior. Now, he didn't personally say, I'm going to decapitate you.
Someone should. You know, he said somebody should.
Well, that's coward. And that's cowardice talk, too. So somebody else ought to do my dirty work for me. Look,
yeah, and he was
on. You got the cojones to do it. Step up and man up.
That's probably why he muted himself when he came in and then said he couldn't get it to work. Thinking that, you know, again, when StreamYard told you he muted himself, that's probably 100% of what happened.
Okay.
Yeah, and when they had, this was like 2 days ago, when they had Imam Tawhidi on their room in Clubhouse, he was talking to him for a little bit, and Tawhidi even called him a terrorist.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah,
Tawhidi would know.
Yeah, you know, that would be neat if we can have Tawhidi on here and we can do the same topic and see
Tawhidi, isn't he a Shiite?
Yes, he's a Shia.
Yeah
and the dangerous thing about him is he's going to world government leaders and they're accepting him to come into their meetings.
Isn't this the Australian?
Yes, it is. Imam Tawhidi, Imam of Peace. Yeah.
He's another one that'll take your head off if he has a chance, trust me.
Well, of course.
Muslim, just like the rest of them.
Of course.
Would be interesting.
Yeah.
I haven't run into him in the circles I've been in, but I might be able to make a connection for you. I'll see if I have a friend who may be able to make that connection for you.
That would be great. We ready to rock and roll, Eric?
Well, I'm just going to roll off on because you know, on Sunday Chris presented a pretty good case for the authenticities of the gospel, but Chris isn't a visual guy. He just put these words up on his PowerPoints, and you know if you want to touch somebody and get them interested and draw them in, you got to have pictures. I mean, it doesn't have to be a picture of yourself. I mean, it could be a picture of. I don't know, Jack Nicholson from A Few Good Men or whatever this is. I don't even know whatever this is. This is Issa. That's right. Issa is this. I'm looking at his picture here. It's what is this, Issa? This is where you were in a play of some sort with this. You were some type of Hindu something. And then look at John. John's got it's the letter N, I believe, for.
That is
we're
the
not
letter
seeing
that
what
means
you're
Christian.
About.
Hold on, just a second.
That's the letter that means Christian.
Yeah, that's Nazarene. Yeah, this was painted on the houses of Christians in
Iraq,
Mosul, Iraq. Yeah, and it's kind of like painting a Jewish star on them. And then, of course, John, he's got, what does he got? He's got Biden up there, for crying out loud. You can do better than that. So what I do is when I do slideshows, I always try to include more visuals, and that's what I've done here. Oops, I didn't do this one right. I got to add that to the stream. There we go. And because on Sunday we were talking about who wrote the Gospels, and of course, you know, Chris did a bang up job on his end, telling us who wrote the Gospels and providing evidence for that. And I'm just going to basically rehash that. And give it to you from a different perspective, because when we were talking about attestation. Well, it's the same information, but just kind of presenting in a different way, I guess. So in Islam, the objection is we don't have any idea who wrote the Gospels, of course. And the Gospel writers were anonymous, of course. And we don't have any surviving originals, of course. So therefore, we cannot trust the Gospels at all because of these three things. So I want to handle all three of these quote unquote objections and try to provide a good bit of evidence to refute everything here. Okay, so the answer is yes, we do know who wrote the gospel, of course, and the writers were not completely anonymous. We'll discuss that, and I'll talk about why we don't have originals coming up. Now, when we look at manuscripts themselves, what we have from antiquity, this is a list of manuscripts, who the author was. We have there it is. Okay. I like my laser pen. I don't know why. It's kind of addictive. But you see the author over here, for an example, let's say Tacitus. Tacitus actually writes about Jesus, and he writes about 100 AD. And the earliest copy we have from Tacitus is not for 1,000 years. You see the time span in between there. And we have about 20 copies of that. So do we still believe what Tacitus wrote? And the answer is yes, of course we do. We have no reason not to believe him. He was a Roman historian. If we look at what Plato wrote between 347 and the earliest copy that we have of his is 900 AD, and that's 1,200 years. We only have 7 copies of it. But do we believe that Plato wrote those things in Plato? Yes, we do. But then you drop down here to the closest thing that we have here, and this is Homer's The Iliad. Now, The Iliad was that wasn't initially written down. That and The Odyssey were both poems that were recited. Sounds a little bit familiar, does it not? It started around 900 BC, and the earliest copy of we have this being written down is 400 BC, and we have about 500 years there. And you have about 643 copies of this. And look, you have a 95% accuracy copying rate with that, which is pretty sound. But then you compare that to the New Testament. New Testament was written down in the first century, of course. And I don't even agree with these dates right here. There's no way it's up to 100 AD. There's no way that's... We talked about this on Sunday, I believe.
Did I think the latest it can go is the most 90. That's debatable. It could be earlier.
Now, my opinion is the latest that it could go would be, the book of Revelation, you may be able to post-date past 70 AD.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, that's 70 AD to 90 AD is that's the debate. That's the only time. That's the late date. That's the only one.
Yeah, I think the gospel, the Gospel of John has to be written prior to 70 AD. It has to be. And I think I pointed that out because of what it says in John 5:2. But look what we have here. This is only 130 year from the earliest copy is dated 130 AD. And that's less than 100 years. And that's the Ryland. Is it called the John Ryland manuscript? Is that P52? And I think that's dated around 130, 120. And if you say that John, I mean, that's less than 50 years of the when it was initially written down. And look how many New Testament manuscripts we have. I mean, that's just astounding. And we have a 99% accuracy rating in these documents themselves. Actually, it's supposed to, 99.75 is what Dan Wallace puts that. Okay, so how do we know who wrote the Gospels? Number one, the Gospels aren't attributed to anybody else. Nobody else is attributed to being the author of Matthew. The same thing with Mark, the same thing with John, the same thing with Luke. All of them say that every attribution to these gospels state that it was these writers, these specific writers, the two disciples of Christ, and then, of course, Luke, the physician, and then John Mark, who was wrote down what Peter had said. And then you have the testimony of the early church fathers, which we're going to discuss at length here, because this is the important part of it, because the early church fathers quote from the New Testament very extensively. People have gone in. I don't know how they do this. I don't know if they did this computer, but or did this before computers or what they did. didn't have a life, maybe not. But what they have done is they've gone in and they've determined that the early church fathers quote every verse of the New Testament with the exception of 12.
Yeah, this was done long before computers came along, because I remember reading about that back in the 80s.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's just, that's insane. I mean, that's 12 verses. And I'm sure they're just, you know, not, I'm not saying they're throwaway verses, but they're, you know, they could be, well, anyway, the fact is they don't contain, they don't quote 12 verses. And then you have evidence from within the Gospels themselves on who wrote them. Now, this is a new graphic that I have. Thank you, Miss Connie. But this shows how the early church fathers are connected to the disciples and Jesus Christ himself. If you come up here to this graphic, or let me get over here. Okay, you have, of course, you have Jesus Christ, then you have the Apostle Paul, Peter, and John. And over here, it kind of gives you a timeline. This graph puts Jesus' crucifixion at 33 AD. Some people put it at 30 AD, but let's just say 33 AD as an example. Give me just a second. I got to do something here.
All right. And then we have 100 AD is about the time period of Clement of Rome.
Yep.
Ignatius, Polycarp. Polycarp's an interesting guy to read if you ever get a chance.
Yeah, he was a fanatic.
Ignatius, I've read his, and Irenaeus, I've read his Adversus Heresies. Justin Martyr's works I recommend. Hippolytus, I recommend reading. It's very, very interesting.
Yeah, okay, so, but here's, I'm just trying to draw a graphic here, though, for people to see. I'm sorry, the queen got home, and I had to, she was making a racket out there with the TV set, so I had to shut the door. Okay, so you have Clement of Rome. He knew both Paul and Peter, and he was the first bishop, I believe, of the church in Rome. Correct. And you have Ignatius. He also knew Peter. He knows John, or he knew John directly, or actually this says he was a disciple of John and Peter, and he knew Polycarp. And over here we have Papias. Thank you, Connie, for she actually redrew this for me and made me a new graphic. So way to go. And we have Papias, who was a bishop in Hierapolis, in which is in Asia Minor around what is now Turkey. And then you have the disciples of these guys. You have Irenaeus, who wrote very extensively. As a matter of fact, I think he's one of the most written or published early church fathers out of all of them. And he had his disciple was Hippolytus. And he was also acquainted with Justin Martyr, Cassian, who wrote the Diatessaron, and of course, Clement of Alexandria. So all these guys are thoroughly connected and early connected. That's, you know, when we start talking about the attestation of the Quran, or let's say a Hadith, okay? The Hadith were supposedly developed, memorized, and passed down from the time of Muhammad, and they were collected, and then they were finally, when they were collected by Sahih Bukhari, was supposed to be the first one out of the six main ones. He didn't start writing these down until 870. Now, when did Muhammad die? 630? Was it 630 or 632? 630. It was 630 he died. No. Was it 632? Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think it's 632, sir.
Okay. So he's been dead for a long time by the time that these things finally get collected. And then you have Muslim, who writes them down just a couple years after that. And then you have Al-Nasi. You have Abu Dawud. There's six main compilers of Ahadith. And they were not compiled until 250 years after the guy's death. Now, this would be the equivalent of finally bringing out and publicizing a copy of the Declaration of Independence today. That was
claiming it had different things.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I've seen a video where they claimed that there were secret passages left out of the pub. Yeah. Yeah.
What, of the Declaration of Independence?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, but I mean, this is what you would have, though. This is where you would have the same trustworthiness of finally saying, well, and nobody not knowing, it was all oral history prior to this. And they finally say, okay, here's the Declaration of Independence. And we're all supposed to believe it. We're supposed to give it the same type of not attestation. What's the word I'm looking for? Is credibility. Well, credibility.
Credibility is one thing, but it sure sounds like hooey.
it does. And this is what makes it so weird, is because these things were not written down and collected. And the earliest extant manuscript of Hadith is not for 400 years after the death of Muhammad. So we don't even have copies of this until 400 years after the death of Muhammad. And we're supposed to believe it because that's where almost all of the Islamic history comes from, is the Hadith. The Sirah of Muhammad, I think that's in this slideshow, so I better shut my mouth. But the Sirah of Muhammad wasn't written down by Ibn Ishaq until 100 years after the death of Muhammad. 100 years. And then we don't even have it.
100 years.
Right, exactly. And we don't have anything. We don't even have that one. Ibn Hisham, who's the one whose copy we do have, used Ibn Ishaq's. I'm sorry, I'm saying it wrong. Ishaq. Mm-hmm. John's going to get on me.
Yeah.
Ibn Ishaq. We don't even have a copy of his. We don't even have a copy of his. Ibn Hisham used his. And he didn't write his down for another 100 years after that either. So you're talking about evidence for Islam is supposed to be on par with that of Christianity. I do not think so. It is not even close.
Not even close. We're talking light years difference.
Right. And we're talking about something that occurred 600 years after Christianity too. So it's recent as compared to Christianity. And there's all kinds of other things that we're going to be talking about here. All right, so here are the early church fathers when we start stacking them all up. Hippolytus. I'm sorry. You guys can't see that, can you? Oh, it'd be good if I put it up on the screen. There you go. So you have Ignatius, and it gives you the dates and how they're related to one another. Justin Martyr's there. Irenaeus, Hippolytus, Clement of Alexandria, Tatian. Okay, so let's move on to the next one. Where did it go? There we are. So here tells you how, okay, this tells you the references to the New Testament and how many they make. So you have Martyr, he has to the Gospels, he references that 268, Irenaeus. Look at Irenaeus. Irenaeus is, keep in mind, he's a disciple of Polycarp. Polycarp was a disciple of John. So you have very close attestation. Clement of Alexandria was a disciple of Irenaeus. And Origen, you have Tertullian, Hippolytus, Eusebius. And look at Eusebius. Eusebius is known as the church historian. But if you look at all the references they have to the Gospels, especially Origen, I mean, it's just incredible. We have 36,000. Different references there. So let's look at Clement of Rome real quick. He's also listed by Irenaeus and Tertullian, and he dies in 99 AD. Now you got to think, Peter and Paul both died about 30 years prior to it. It's 35 years. They put their death about 64, 65 AD, and he was considered the first father of the church with Polycarp and Ignatius. He was a leader in Rome after Paul and Peter were martyred. And he basically taught what they taught. He taught that Jesus Christ was the Son of God, that he died on a cross, and that he was resurrected. Now look at Clement of Rome again. So let's look at the early church, a list of them. We got Clement of Rome, Ignatius, and where they are, Polycarp, Papias. Who's this? Darcy's here. All right. Then you have, let's go back over here, Irenaeus. Every time I do that, that happens. We got to figure that out. Okay, and then you have Clement. So this gives you the dates that they lived. Now, here's the key thing to look at. When we look at Tertullian and Hippolytus and Origen, all of these guys are writing based on the teachings of these guys up here, okay? And Clement of Alexandria, I'd include in those four. And the reason why I bring that up is because this is the time period right in here, mid to late second century, where the apocryphal writings start appearing and when the Gnostic writings start appearing. This is where we start seeing all of these heresies. And this is why you have people like Irenaeus titling his book Against Heresies. So yes, this is where you have all of these early church fathers writing about church doctrine, which is learned from these people, fighting off all of these people who are trying to make a name for themselves using the name of Christ. Now, this information that I got here is from a guy by the name of J. Warren Wallace. You need to subscribe to his website, Cold Case Christianity. As a matter of fact, he has an app for that. You need to go see that. So let's look at the three people that John taught: Papias, Polycarp, and Ignatius. Papias lived after Christ died, but he was alive. If you look at it, he was alive at the time that Jerusalem was sacked. And he was known as a hearer of John. Of course, he's a friend of Polycarp. He was a bishop in Hierapolis. And he knew the oral testimonies of the eyewitness. He wrote now this is what we need to understand here. He wrote a five-volume treatise called Interpretations of the Sayings of the Lord. And we know this, and we know we don't know everything that was in this because we don't have any existing copies of what he wrote, unfortunately. But that's it can be problematic, but it's not problematic. And the reason why I say it's not problematic is simply because this is how history is done. Eusebius would not have been able to quote from Papias's work unless what? Eusebius himself had that work. So Eusebius had it and wrote about it, and we have Eusebius's work, but not Papias's. So this it doesn't really matter. It does matter, because we don't know everything that Papias wrote, but he alludes to all of these things that he did write. So this is when we start talking about a link in the chain of custody of the Gospels. Because why? He commented upon the Gospels, and he commented upon what these people said. So again, here we have Papias right here, and he's a disciple of John. We have his writings. Or we know what he did wrote. Now let's look at what Polycarp wrote. He lived at the same time. He's a bit younger than Papias. And he was a friend of Ignatius, of course. And he was converted to Christianity by the apostles themselves, which I think is just really, really neat. And he was a bishop in Smyrna. And he wrote letters to the Philippians. And in his letters, he references all kinds of New Testament books. Now look at the dates of this. He's dated 69 to 155, and he is citing books that existed, that we know existed at this time. This is important. This is how history is done. If you have a eyewitness to John, the Apostle John, in his letters, citing three of the four Gospels, Acts, Romans, 1 Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, all of these different writings, then you can be pretty sure that these writings were in wide circulation at the time that he lived. And he would know why, because look at this, he is a student of John, so he would be able to verify these things. This is why it's so important to understand the chain of custody that we have here. Okay, let's talk about Ignatius. Now, was born right after the crucifixion of Christ. And, of course, he's a student of John also, writes all kinds of letters to the early church that we even have today, seven of them that we have today. And these are important because they demonstrate that the New Testament was already written and familiar to the early Christians, because a lot of people say, well, the New Testament was not canonized until the Council. Have you guys heard this argument before, that the New Testament was canonized at the Council of Nicaea? Have you guys kind of a sidebar on that?
Yeah, we've heard that lie before, over and over and over again.
Okay. I don't think a lot of people understand what the Council of Nicaea was about. And it wasn't.
Tell us, Eric. Tell us.
Well, okay, but I'm just saying that the reason I bring it up is because Muslims will often say, "Well, Jesus was made God at the Council of Nicaea in 325 AD." No, he wasn't. The Bible was finally canonized in 325 AD. No, it wasn't. The Council of Nicaea. The only thing the Council of Nicaea. The reason why they called the Council of Nicaea is because you had a heresy in Alexandria, I think it was Alexandria, Egypt, fairly certain, by a bishop down there by the name, no, he wasn't a bishop. He was like a deacon or a presbyter, so I can't remember, by a guy by the name of Arian. And this is how particular these guys were. You want to say that they were anal, you can say that they were anal. They were anal. Arian, his heresy, this is why this council was called, is because, and actually this council was actually called by Constantine, of all people. Constantine did not want a split in his empire. So what he does is he says, you guys need to get your stuff together and get this decided. And a lot of people are saying that Constantine told them what to believe. And it's not true. It's not true. He saw the differences here. He says, you guys need to get together and talk this out. And they did. And they decided that the Arian was a heretic. And the reason why they said he was a heretic is because he taught that Jesus Christ was created. He was not eternal. He was the created entity of the Trinity. So Arius. Is that Arius? Too many Marys? Arius. What's that? He didn't have a council there. What do you mean by Arius? What's this? It's deeply, I'm not following too many Marys here. I think we're going to. Okay, anyway, so they called this council, and this is where we get the Nicene Creed. And if anybody can pull up the Nicene Creed for me, as a matter of fact, I'll pull up the Nicene Creed. Why do I always put Nicene Creed? Why do I always misspell that?
I think it's like 315 or 323.
325, I believe. Yeah.
325, yeah.
325, yeah. Okay, so here it is. Somebody just pop in.
It's been a while. I still got copies of some of what Arian stated, and so if that, I mean, to tell you that, I mean, I worked on one of the first books I actually tried to work on was a history of heresy, and was able to get a hold of that stuff. That can says something.
Can you send that?
I have to type it up. I can do that.
Well, I can do that. I mean, maybe you can just get your phone and take a picture of it or something. Just a couple of them.
I'll type it up.
Just to make me dangerous, Paul. Make me dangerous.
Okay, this is the Nicene Creed. Now, listen to the word in here on the Nicene Creed. Now, I was a good little Lutheran boy, and I had to memorize this when I was in 7th or 8th grade. And you had to know, you had the Nicene Creed, the Apostles' Creed, and there was a third.
Well, if you're from a traditional church, you had to have those memorized. That was just part of going to church.
Well, you had not only had to know what it memorized, but each part of this, you had to know exactly what the catechism.
Yeah, because of Luther's small catechism, correct.
Yeah, what does this mean? And you had to have that memorized, too. So not only had to have the creed memorized, you had to have this crap memorized. It was tough. Anyway, I believe in one God, the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, of all things visible and invisible. I believe in one Lord Jesus Christ, the only begotten Son of God, born of the Father before all ages, God from God, light from light, true God from true God, begotten. Now, this is the important part. This settles this heresy right here. Begotten, not made, consubstantial with the Father, through him all things were made. Now, the modern version says begotten, not made, being of one substance with the Father. That's basically what that means. Through him all things were made, for us men, for our salvation. Okay, so I just wanted to make that point that everybody understood that when we get to what the early church fathers believed, what they taught, that this idea that the Bible was codified at the Council of Nicaea and Jesus was made God, it's just stupid is what it is. It was to settle this Arian heresy that was in Alexandria, Virginia.
So in our origin, I actually have pieces here from about Arianism. Origen was supposed to be, Origen believed that, this is one of his, Origen believed that Arius was falsely claimed of historical significance to the Arians. Arian taught that Jesus Christ was and is co-eternal with God the Father and existed before all the worlds, for since the Father is always the Father, there must always be a Son. Since the Son is the image of the Father, he is dependent on the Father, thus being secondary and subordinate to him. So the heresy is not as significant until you start looking at certain other parts of it. There's a lot more. Arius he breaks off and he changes. Arius taught the Father alone is God, inaccessible and unique in being, the principle of all things. That Christ, the Son of God, was made out of that which had no prior existence. So this is where Eric's talking about, that if the Son is a true Son, then the Father must have existed before the Son. So this is, he doesn't accept that. I think you get to this by not accepting that God is beyond our comprehension. If you start this is where I think the Muslims in general, the followers of Islam in general, can't accept that the concept of God is beyond our total comprehension. And some things go beyond our grasp. And that's why, I think that's why Arius screwed up, because he couldn't accept that some things were beyond his grasp.
Yeah, and I think a lot of, and I've said this several times on the show, that it's the arrogance, it's the hubris of mankind telling God what he is and what he is not. And if you listen to Islamic apologists, they'll tell you God is not, God is not, God is not, God cannot, God cannot. Who are you, the finite, to tell God what he is, what he is not, what he can do and what he can't? Really, really. And if you follow the word, if you stay, near to the word, you're not going to have a problem with it. But these guys are so detached from what the word actually is, the true gospel, which we're getting back to right now. I haven't lost my place, by the way. What we're getting back to is verified and has much better attestation than any other work from that era.
Amen. Okay. Go on?
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's funny that they'll take all the Gnostic writings instead of the true, authentic writings of the gospel. They always want to find the Gnostic and the unconfirmed writings that are not even from the apostles or the first fathers. To me, I think it's just very funny that they'll choose all the Gnostic writings.
Right. Well, we had a conversation about that the other night, didn't we? When we were talking about attestation for the crucifixion, where the evidence that they were bringing, they said, well, and I was wrong when I made that comment that I was thinking of credible credible references to the crucifixion, or that Jesus wasn't crucified. But anyway, right. He called me out, rightly so. But they were saying that there are writings out there that said that Jesus wasn't crucified. Well, like what? Well, like the Basilides or the Marcinians, or he cited the Gospel of Peter, the first Gospel of this stuff that has been completely refuted. Declared heresies at the time, and they're trying to use them as some type of form of attestation for the crown being right on the crucifixion. They were confused. No, nobody was confused. The only people that were confused were the people that surrounded themselves around Muhammad. Those are the only people that are confused.
Right. Okay. That followed the heretic writings.
Right, and that's what they're using to prove that the Quran got it right. You're going to use the writings from heretics. I mean, one of them, I can't remember if it was either the Marcinians or the Basilides, one of the two, said that Jesus didn't even have a body. And the reason why they said that he didn't have a body is because the flesh is sinful. And since if Jesus had flesh, then he would therefore be sinful. So therefore, he couldn't have been crucified because he didn't have a body. And you're going to believe that?
Well, yeah, I mean, in the Bible,
yeah, they don't believe. Yeah, they don't believe the writings of John that says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and the Word of God became flesh." So, if the Word of God became flesh, that means that He is sinless. He is holy. Because it's the Word of God. It's the Word of God. God can't be holy. God is holy, right? So the Word of God, which was God, became flesh and dwelt among us and tabernacled among us.
Yes.
So it's because they don't. And a lot of those heretics, like the Unitarians, which they got from the Ebionites, they do not believe the first chapter of John because it states clearly that Jesus is God. Thank you.
1 John 4:3, and every spirit that confesses not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is not of God, and this is that spirit of Antichrist, whereof you have heard that it should come, and even now already is in the world.
Amen.
Thank you. There's so many proof texts that we could use to show that they're wrong, but.
And that's what we do. They need the scripture.
Well, they need a lot more than that. They need
they need the Holy Ghost and God. Yes.
Yeah, they need the Spirit, right? Okay, so let's get back to Ignatius. We're running out of time. Okay, so Ignatius, of course, let's bring this back up here. Again, he also, along with Polycarp, refers to several books that were in circulation at this time. He also provided, and again, here we have this chain of custody relating to the original accounts. We have a chain of custody. We don't have a chain of narration. We have a chain of written custody. So here is Ignatius, and look at Ignatius. Ignatius is a disciple of John. So you have a direct chain of custody here in writing all the way back to Jesus Christ. Let's see here. They all taught Irenaeus, by the way. And Irenaeus, let's go back to that. Here's Irenaeus right here. Right there's Irenaeus. Just make sure we understand where he is. And they taught him. Not, I think Papias might not have taught him. That might be wrong. I'm going to need to fix that slide. When we think of, let's see here, Irenaeus was a hearer of Polycarp. Polycarp was a hearer of John. And he's just, they're repeating and writing down what these conversations were like. And here is the biggest work he had against heresies. This is, as a matter of fact, I have that.
I have that someplace.
Yeah. That's,
oh my gosh, it's a great book.
Yeah, well, it's hard to. I mean, it's hard to read that stuff, but you can get through it if you have half a brain. Okay, and what he did was he responded to this heresy of Gnosticism, and yes. He also responded to the heresies as found in apocryphal writings.
He not only responds, he quotes them in his response. So. If you're ever looking to go after Gnosticism, you absolutely must read this work.
And this is how history is done. A lot of these writings, these Gnostic writings, we don't have. We don't know what they said. They don't exist. The only reason why we know them is because people like Irenaeus quoted extensively from. It's like the what was that nun cult that believed that Mary, is it Coloridians? The Coloridians that believed that Mary was God and worshiped Mary as God. Well, we don't have any writings. And this is, you know,
Islam?
What's that?
Doesn't Islam call Mary a God when she said
this is exact. This is the point that I was making about that is that the very thing that because the Quran tells you, and I think it's 1:474, say not three. And then it also talks about did you take you and your mother as gods along with me? And Jesus is like, no, I didn't. Why would I say that? Well, why would you ask Jesus this question in the Quran if they took you, Jesus, and your mother as God, if you didn't think she was God? Why would you say that? That's stupid. And they deny it to the teeth. So they believe that Mary was God. And they say, oh, look, we have proof that the early Christians worshiped Mary as God. I'm like, well, where do you have that? Well, they have it from the early church fathers quoting the Coloridians who said that Mary was God. So this is where that comes from. So a lot of these things where we can get, because we don't have any of the writings from the Collyridian.
And these are church fathers quoting these heretics when they're talking to people about how stupid and how vile they are, and they're off the mark. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay, let's get back on this. Here we have, okay, so here you have 24 of the New Testament books being quoted by Ignatius. Let me go here. I want to show you how close he is. Here's Ignatius, or I'm sorry, Irenaeus, right here. Look how a direct line here of the chain of narration. What did we call this the other day? Chain of
authorship.
Authorship. There we go. Chain of, there it's right there on the slide where it says chain of authorship. Very good. And so you have another link here in this chain of custody affirming that we have eyewitness accounts that preserve the New Testament. Irenaeus also taught Hippolytus, who was born in Rome. He was a disciple of course of Irenaeus, and he was the bishop there, and he became the first antipope or rival pope in Christian history. He wrote a huge 10-volume treatise called Refutations of All Heresies, and it's just absolutely phenomenal in its depth and breadth. And again, you have all four Gospels. Keep in mind, all four Gospels were cited by Irenaeus and Hippolytus. Three of the four Gospels are cited by, the only one that's not cited early is Mark. Now, that doesn't mean Mark did not exist, it's just it was not cited by those three early church fathers. But they also cite all of these other epistles and includes the book of Revelation. Okay, so let's look at why we know these were written early and how we know that they were repeated often. Okay, let's see. All of these writers say that Jesus was born of a virgin. They all talk about Jesus' birth being announced by a star, that he was buried or baptized by John the Baptist. He was sinless, unassuming life. He spoke words and taught the Sermon on the Mount, which is very important. He was omnipotent, meaning that omniscience is all-knowing. Omnipotence is all-powerful. That's ointment. What the heck is that? Sorry about that. Omnipotence was poured on his head. Sorry. Okay, they're all citing these things that we find in the Gospels, and so all of these we find to include these early church fathers are saying that Jesus was what? He was crucified. Read 4:157 and try to get away with that one. Of course, he was crucified. All this took place under Pontius Pilate. He died and was resurrected. He has a physical resurrection, not a spiritual one. He appeared to Peter and the others after the resurrection. And this is doubting Thomas. He encouraged the disciples to touch him and ate with them. And the disciples were convinced that the resurrection. Hold on just a second. I'm going to have to sneeze again. I don't know why this goes on at this time of day. Sorry. Okay. And that the disciples were convinced by the resurrection appearance. Now, David Wood had a great interview this week. I think it was this week with Bart Ehrman they discussed this very, very thing here. Bart Ehrman believes that the disciples saw or what they believed to be Jesus after the resurrection. He'll even admit that, which is, I think, is incredible.
And Bart Ehrman is not a believer.
Yeah, he's not a member of the Baptist Church. No, I don't think he is. He's an atheist.
He's more of a historian, and people quote him as saying he's a Christian, which is kind of sad.
Well, he's a Greek. His PhD is in Greek something, like Greek manuscripts, Greek New Testament manuscripts. He's often quoted by atheists. He's often quoted by Muslims because of his criticalness of when he critiques the New Testament. They think that they can quote him and say, "Oh, well, look, he thinks that Jesus didn't even live." No, that's not what Bardarm believes. Or Jesus didn't die on a cross. No, Jim Bardarm says the best fact of the life of Christ is that he did die on a cross. He believes that they don't say that he was resurrected. You know, he says, and this is what kind of surprised me in the interview, is that he said that the apostles, the disciples of Christ, believed that they saw a thing that was like Jesus. They all had this, I think he's trying to describe this, you know, they all had a vision, common vision of some sort, which doesn't make a lot of sense. Okay, and all of these early church fathers believe or taught that Jesus returned to the Father. So all of these things are taught by the early church fathers. You just read all these things. It's just incredible the things that we find written by the early church fathers that are completely consistent with what our faith system teaches today. Okay, so how do we know that Matthew wrote Matthew? Well, it's mentioned by Papias, Polycarp, Ignatius, Irenaeus, and Hippolytus. And here's some things that people, it's kind of the internal evidence that we find here. It's that indicate that it's very organized. And this is something that a tax collector, somebody that's familiar with organizational skills. What's that?
Yeah. Okay. You said Polycarp, you know, mentions Matthew. What year did Polycarp live?
Polycarp was a disciple of John. He died 155, was born, I don't know, I can't remember. Let me go back here. No, it's all right. I can go right back to this chart. Holy crap.
Just so everybody.
There we go.
Yeah.
Polycarp, 100 AD.
Wow.
Oh my gosh, you're going to get me to go way back. There we are, 69 to 155 AD. 69 to 155 AD. So here
you have. Oh, my goodness. Polycarp. Awesome. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Okay. Let's. There we go. Okay. And then also you have the Gospels referred to Matthew as Levi, tax collector. And when he speaks of money.
I'm sorry, yep. Eric. May I say something else?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So they won't accept that Polycarp, you know, mentions Matthew, but they will accept the Hadiths, which were written nearly 250 years ago, of all what Muhammad said.
Yep.
Man.
I'm thinking of a word. It begins with H and ends with hypocrisy, but I'm not going to say it out loud.
What's that word? You mean heretic or something?
It begins with H and ends with hypocrisy. So I'm thinking hypocrisy.
Oh,
okay. Hypocrite.
Yes. Oh, okay, I see. Yeah.
Okay. I got to get rolling. I'm sorry. I don't mean to go fast, but I got to get to church. Okay. So let's see. Now, here's the interesting fact here. And this, I want to spend a little bit of a couple minutes with doing this. Hold on. Let me put this over here. Okay. He was not a prominent disciple. Now, think about this for a second. If you are going to have some type of credibility issue, you want to make somebody credible, you are going to have somebody like Peter write a gospel and put his name on it. Or you're going to have somebody like Andrew write a gospel, put his name on it. You're going to have some other people that are other disciples that were more prominent to write these gospels, put their names on it to give them a sense of authenticity, authority. Matthew was kind of one of those backwater disciples. He was not too active in what everything they were doing, but he was a disciple nonetheless. But he's not the one that you would think that they would say that, okay, this guy was, you know, one of the disciples, and that we can trust what he wrote. You would have, like I said, you would have some of the main disciples out there. Or if you have the gospel, say the Gospel of Mark. Well, the Gospel of Mark was written by John Mark, who was a disciple of Peter's. You would think that it would be the Gospel of Peter. But no, they don't label them like that. So that is another indication there that these are authentic. Okay. Mark, of course, he's mentioned by Papias. Irenaeus and Hippolytus as being the author.
I didn't see that though. I'm gonna have to fact check myself. Can somebody fact check me on that to see if either those Papias mentioned Sims? I know Irenaeus does because Irenaeus is the first one to mention all four Gospels, but I'm not sure if Papias does.
Okay.
So somebody could fact check me on that one. I'd appreciate it so I could fix this if I have to. Of course, John Mark is identified in Acts and all these other passages. I don't know. Mark became the interpreter of Peter. So I am right on that. Maybe I just forgot that little fact. But the early church unanimously agreed John Mark was the writer. Same thing with Luke. Luke is mentioned by Polycarp, Ignatius, Irenaeus, Clement of Alexandria, Tertullian, Origen. He's mentioned in Colossians. And both Luke and Acts were written in the same stylistically. They're the same. And they use the same medical terminology. Why is that important? Because everybody says that Luke was a physician. And it also uses words that describe conditions and the exact manner in which Jesus healed people. So he's using very specific language that deals with, why didn't I lose my laser pointer here? Very specific language that deals with anatomy. Medical terms. Okay. John, how do we know John? Because he's mentioned by Papias, Polycarp, Ignatius, Irenaeus, Hippolytus, and virtually every other church father as being the author of the gospel. Now, he does refer to himself as the one who Jesus loved. The reason why he did that is because, there's probably several other reasons for this that I'm not aware of, but I think of when Jesus is on the cross, it's John that's right there at the foot of the cross of Jesus with Jesus' mother Mary. And Jesus gives charge of John to care for his mother, and you would not give that to somebody that you did not love. And that might be why he's referred to as the one that Jesus loved. I'm willing to be wrong on that, but that's kind of my hypothesis on that. And he also says that he was an eyewitness. He's the one that tells us the number of the jars at the wedding in Cana, how long it took those people at the pool of Bethesda, had been crippled, and other things that we find in his gospel that tells us that he was an eyewitness to the events. And look at, he also identifies the purpose of the jars at the wedding at Cana, which is kind of cool. What they did. Who is it?
I'm sorry. I was just going to say that it's confirmed that Papias was one of the fellows there that you were questioning about.
That mentioned Mark. He mentions Mark.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Great. Then I don't have to change my slideshow. I don't know why I spaced that one off. I was thinking that Mark was not mentioned until Irenaeus, but there you go. So when we get to those slides, I'll remind you to make how important that is. Okay. Oh, John's back. Hello, John.
Hello. I'm sorry.
No, that's quite all right. We appreciate you coming back. All right. So John was with Jesus during Passover. He mentions Jesus filling the 5,000. He talks about the Festival of Tabernacles. He talks about the Festival of Dedication, where specifies that it was, that this is important. Other people could just say it was winter, but he specifies why they were in Jerusalem at the time. And of course, he records Pilate is the one that handed Jesus over. And look at all these other things. I'm not going to read through all of these things, but he has all kinds of other reasons why we know that John wrote John. Okay. And let's see. I don't even know what I had there. So John was close to Peter. Goodness. Look at all these things. John. So he's an eyewitness to all of these things. So John is mentioned by Tatian, Tertullian, Clement of Alexander. So you can see he's mentioned by all these things. Okay, so the reason why I said it was important that Mark is mentioned by Papias is because all four Gospels are mentioned by all of these students of John. John was an eyewitness. John would be in a position to know. So that's how we know that the Gospels themselves are authentic. Okay, I'm thinking I'm getting too far. Oh, and we also know that John wrote the Gospels because we find it in the Sirah, the biography of Muhammad. It says it right there on page 103, among the things which have reached me about Jesus, son of Mary, stated in the Gospel, which he received from God. Is following. It is extracted from what John the Apostle set down for them when he wrote what? The Gospel, the New Testament. Now, where are the originals? This is kind of important. I think that was the last question that was asked. Why don't we have all kinds of copies of the New Testament? Well, that's a fair question. Why don't we have the originals? That's really not a fair question for a document going back to 2,000 years, because we don't have originals from anything from that era. So why would you expect to have the originals from the Gospels unless you're a hypocrite? But with this, they were destroyed. A lot of those originals, or I wouldn't say a lot of the originals, but a lot of the copies of the New Testament were destroyed. Why? Because the Christians endured a severe era of persecution. And the worst of it came in 302 with an emperor by the name of Diocletian. This is where he's not only burning scripture, but he's also taking your church leaders out and having them burned at the stake.
There's the additional element that people are reading these, and they're reading them and reading them and reading them and committing them to memory and reading and reading. And these materials were not the best for being read many times.
Well, they were written on papyrus, and papyrus is a very, very fragile plant when you dry it out. And it doesn't last very long. That would be the same. Look, this piece of paper right here, I expect this piece of paper to last 2,000 years. Who would expect this piece of paper to last 2,000 years? Anybody out there? If people read it, looked at it, copied it, would you expect this piece of paper to last 2,000 years?
I have books that are a couple hundred years old, but I do not have anything over that length. And the rarity of something to survive that long is something. The oldest book I have is actually from the 1790s, and it's a Bible. And some of the pages are a little crumbly. And, you know, people don't realize things generally don't last 200 years or 300. But if you think about what we can go back and find, it's still mind-numbing.
The fact that we have anything from that time period, because of the light in light of the persecution, in light of the fact that the was written on, is very fragile. And also, you know, one of the things that I wanted to end on here was the Council of Nicaea in 325. When they start saying that the Council of Nicaea changed the gospel, or would somehow forsake what was written and change it. What these people don't understand, I'm going to be nice about it, is that those people who were at the Council of Nicaea had endured the terror of Diocletian. They were there. They saw the persecution that the Christians had gone through. And if you think for a second that these guys would somehow capitulate on their beliefs, what they knew, to appease some emperor after they had gone through what they did with Diocletian, you're an idiot if you believe that. And I don't mean to insult idiots, but you would be an idiot if you believe that. Okay, I got about 3 minutes, guys, before I gotta go. Who has something to say before we check out?
Are we talking about slavery?
No, we didn't make it to slavery. I'm sorry that for that. We were talking about. I was thinking that. Would you stop with that? What the heck, dude? No, these guys are twerking, tweaking.
I didn't know Sufis twerked.
I don't think those are Sufi. I think those are regular Muslim guys. I guess no women are allowed.
Oh, gosh. There's some things that you cannot unsee. Oh my gosh.
Well, since we're ending the show, I figured, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's funny. Well, I think the big point here is that, you know, there's so much evidence that Jesus was real. And why not give him a shot? Give your life. Take a shot. Give your life to him. Find out how real he is in person.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, Paul, because if you would, I mean, if you want a copy of this slideshow, email me, I'll send it to you, and you can go through here and check, double check, triple check, fact check me to see if this is true. And if it is true, then you need to do what you need to do is you need to evaluate why are you criticizing, providing these criticisms, saying, well, that's it's been corrupted. They've changed that. How can you say that when in light of what has been demonstrated tonight? I would find that very hard. And then that would call and cause and question your own faith in what you believe in and why, and then what is motivating you to criticize the Gospels. All right, so we're going to call it a night. Maybe I can be on time for this meeting. You don't have to be late. I appreciate everybody. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you so much for contributing tonight. Everybody in chat, again, I haven't been able to pay too much attention to chat. I've been over there a couple times. I've been trying to follow this stuff on screen. Umar, dude, you failed twice. How's that go? Fool me once, shame on. Thank you, Paul. You know what I'm saying.
Shame on you.
Yeah. It ain't happened a third time. So, especially if he told you that you got to get your.
Yeah, it's the other way around. Yeah. Shame on you.
Obviously, his prophet's not worth defending. So there you have it.
Well, you never find anybody willing to stand up to defend Muhammad unless they're true believers.
Well, they won't. This is the one thing that I've noticed, that they will not defend the Quran. They will not defend what Muhammad did. They will turn around and argue tooth and nail to try to change the subject, turn it back on the Bible, turn it back on you Christians, you evil Christians. And it's a sick pattern of behavior. They're going to have to. It's eventually going to have to happen because this excuse that, well, the Quran doesn't need defending. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And
there's
more and
a
more
tsunami
people.
Tsunami.
Right, you're right. That's exactly what it is. It's a tsunami of information, of facts that are coming out about this stuff now. Well, and they don't have answers for them.
Just look at the Muslims that I don't even know if I want to call it a debate. Man, I lost some brain cells last night.
Oh, my gosh. tell us what the one girl said about, I would believe it if.
She was talking about that, you know, she believes everything in the Quran because it's from God. So I said, because we were discussing embryology, right? And she kept insisting the Quran was right. And I'm like, okay. So then I asked her, I said, before we continue, something like that. I said, if the Quran said that feces was created from gold, would you believe it? And she says, absolutely. And I was like,
no, you said if gold was created from feces.
I actually said if feces was created from gold, not gold was created from feces. And she agreed. And I'm like, how can I continue with somebody who, just because a book that she believes is from God? And then, so it was two women, they're Quran only. And then she brought a Brocco, which is about as dumb as a doorknob. He's a Quran only. And then it was Truth Seeker, and he's a Quran only. And these guys are trying to explain this verse. And I'm like, dude, it ain't happening. Oh, what about blood? And I'm like, what does blood have to do with how a baby is created? Or there's gushing fluid from the spine that gets involved in. I'm like, dude, man.
Yeah, it's you know, it's like I said, it's sometimes you feel like you're just talking to a wall. and you'd probably be better off talking to the wall because you get more and more intelligible.
Or a lump of pleasure.
Oh, check this out, man. You got a fan. UA says the EF Dawah always looking to engage with Christians. See, the problem is they won't debate one-on-one, and I'm not going to go to a Muslim panel and have four or five idiots gang up and laugh at you and all that sort. So
well, I got invited to a room last night, and I was trying to get involved in the conversation. Like, calm down, Eric. Okay, wait your turn. Yeah. I was in there for 30 minutes, and it still wasn't my turn. And my turn never came up. And I'm like, all right, guys, see you later.
I mean, I posted on EF Dallas.
Testing, 1, 2, 3.
I can hear you, Connie. I can hear you, Connie. Yes,
okay,
yeah,
can you hear background noise? This is my new thing that I got, woo-hoo! My headset that I got that I recommended. Yes, woohoo, that I've recommended also to you, Eric. Fits my phone perfect. It comes with a different jack just in case it doesn't fit your phone. But so you hear good?
Excellent. Yeah. No echo, no background.
Good and clear.
Woohoo. Because I'm sitting in my garage right now. Yeah, I'm charging a phone for an Amazon coworker that asked me if he can charge his phone. So I'm babysitting his phone right now too.
I hope you charge him a good.
I never meet a stranger, so yeah.
Okay, guys, I got to go. I got to get to this meeting. God bless
you. Thank you, Eric.
All right, we'll see you Sunday, 2 p.m. Oh, like, share, subscribe.
Maybe I'll see you on Clubhouse.
You probably will.
I know, man. That thing's too addictive. Have a good one.
All right, you
take care. God bless you guys. Bye.
Thanks for coming, John.